Hello and welcome to Free Speech, the show that makes your voice heard in the national conversation. I'm Rich Edwards and welcome to Free Speech. Tonight we are live from Broadwater Farm in Tottenham, North London. Our live audience here is ready to tell us what they think, but we want to hear what you think too. Just tell Tina Dehealy.
Thank you very much, Rick, and a very good evening to all of you. We want to hear from you at home in this show. Here are the hashtags and the addresses you need. Now, your answers and your comments will come straight to me, where I'll make sure they're heard in the debate. Now, as well as your comments, we'll be running the power bar. It should be behind me. There it is. Now, as the questions are asked, we'll be putting them up on the bottom of the screen for you to debate. Just use the hashtag FreeSpeechYes or hashtag FreeSpeechNo to let us know what you think of the topic being discussed.
And here is our panel for this evening. Telegraph columnist and historian Tim Stanley. Broadcaster and Labour parliamentary selection candidate Amy LeMay, easy for me to say. Louisa Zisman, businesswoman and star of The Apprentice and Celebrity Big Brother. And Majid Nawaz, co-founder of anti-extremist think tank Quilliam and now Lib Dem candidate for Parliament. That is your panel. So our first question comes from our studio audience. Hamza, what would you like to ask?
My question is, are the police right to judge young people on the way we look?
OK, so are the police right to judge young people based on the way that we look? Let's start with you, please, Majid.
Yeah, my answer would be absolutely not. I have been probably the only person on this panel that's been arrested at gunpoint at the age of 15 after being racially profiled for suspicion of armed robbery in Essex. I was detained overnight and released the next day, and I know exactly how terrifying it can be to have a gun put to your head by the police. I think that if you're going to profile people racially, that tells you nothing about whether they're carrying drugs, it tells you nothing about whether they're carrying weapons, and all it does is breed the sort of resentment that we saw, sadly, last summer here in this very area we're in Tottenham.
OK. Louisa?
I think it's a difficult one. I think certain people, unfortunately, fit into a certain demographic that statistically they will carry knives or do drugs. But again, on the flip side, it is wrong to be discriminated against. But, you know, the police, to some extent, have to profile people because they can't stop and search everybody on the street.
So how would you respond to that, Hamza?
I would say that young people... Why do the police have to take the media stereotypes of young people just because we're wearing hoodies or trainers and, like, on the street, of just because a certain group of young people commit those crimes, everyone who wears that brand isn't a criminal. So, obviously, the riots in 2011, the media stereotyped that it was 18 to 24-year-olds, but on the streets, it was more 30-plus-year-olds who were looting and stealing.
OK, so there's a problem with stereotyping and stereotyping incorrectly. Yes, gentleman at the back.
Yes, just to go back to his point, I think it's quite easy to jump out of police for profiling, but it's just in society in general that we, as young people, have been profiled in the media, everywhere we go, on the streets. Like, I could walk in the street just wearing a hoodie and see other people at the far end just cross the street. Mm. That's just not the police, it's society in general.
So it's a broader problem, yes. In fact, you think. What do you think, Tim?
That's a very, very good point. I think there are two different issues here. First is that of youth being targeted on the basis of the way that people dress. Well, no, if you wear a hoodie, it doesn't mean you're necessarily a criminal, but you are statistically more likely to be a criminal, and therefore you're going to be judged by the police in that way. That's very unfortunate, but hey, the police have got to make snap decisions like that.
Sorry, where are
these
statistics?
That's very, very separate and very different from the issue of racial profiling, which is utterly apparent and there's no excuse for. And none of this should justify stopping and searching, which is simply unconstitutional. You should not be able to stop someone on the basis of how they look. Nevertheless, I don't think we can blame the police for trying to bring law and order to the streets by making judgments that are irrational on the basis of people hanging around in groups or gangs. Or people looking a certain way on the basis of their clothing. And you know, that's not unreasonable.
Majid, you want to jump in there, I think?
I'm just curious, because if you think that the majority of people that wear hoodies happen to be in preparing to commit a crime.
No, I didn't say that.
Or that's statistically demonstrable to have been carrying something. And most people in California are wearing hoodies these days. I just find that really strange where the statistics are that demonstrate the... these days, people wear all sorts of clothing. I mean, that strikes me as preposterous as saying most people wearing pink ties and grey suits are bankers who are basically ripping everyone off. I mean, that would
probably
be a stereotype.
Are. They probably are.
We're going to move on to our next question. You might actually remember this one. We tried to debate it on our last show in Birmingham, but then we didn't. So better late than never, really.
As a Sifa Lahore, I talk about issues of being Muslim, gay and British in today's society. And essentially these labels, you know, they shouldn't fit well together, but here I am and I refuse to give one up over the other. I kept it to myself for many, many years because I was always afraid of what the community would say, what my parents would say. I came out to my parents when I was in my early 20s. My mum came into my room and she questioned me about my sexuality. I said this in Urdu, which is my mother tongue. I said, Ammi main gay hoon, which means mum, I'm gay. So there was an occasion where my mum asked, you know, whether I needed to go and see a doctor. I said to my mum, this isn't something that, you know, I can take a medicine for. When I introduced my partner to my parents, I introduced him as, you know, this is the person I want to marry. And although I entered into civil partnership, they sort of saw it equal as a marriage, and my mum ended up attending the ceremony and ended up sort of giving me away and giving us her blessing. I know it sounds cliche, but it was the best moment of my life. Sifa Lahore has allowed me to reach out to many people that I wouldn't have really reached out as Asif. My mum, my aunties, and my sisters actually came to see one of my shows. And the gay community were just totally inspired and in awe that, you know, a Muslim woman, you know, dressed in a niqab had come into a gay space and was watching a cabaret drag show. One question I'd like to ask the Muslim community is, when will it be right to be Muslim and gay?
OK, Asif is with us this evening. Asif, why did you want to ask that question?
It's an issue that is affecting a lot of gay Muslims up and down the country, thousands of gay Muslims up and down the country, and I think it's a topic that's really relevant today. It's a topic that doesn't get discussed on any level, continuously gets brushed underneath the carpet, and I'd like to get it discussed today.
OK. Amy, what do you think?
I think...
Will it ever be all right?
I think it's absolutely all right. I think Asif is incredibly inspiring, and to hear your story, especially about your family being so loving and gentle with you, is just wonderful. Of course it's okay to be gay and Muslim and Christian and non-religious and whatever. You know, this is the 21st century, and you know, not only do we have the laws to support this equality, we also have changed a lot of hearts and minds in this country in the past 20 years about issues around equality. You know, we're looking at a really fantastic weekend ahead. On Saturday, we're going to have the first equal marriages taking place here in the UK, and I think it's a really proud moment for the country.
Okay. Abdullah, what's your position on this?
Well, the Islamic position is that we don't label people by their sexuality or their nationality or their race. This label was invented in the Victorian era. As soon as you discriminated them by label, you discriminated them. In Islam, we don't have a title or identity called you're gay, homosexual, heterosexual. It's just humans. But in the only thing that's judged is not really your desires, because we all have sinful desires. It's just actions which are judged in Islam. And, you know, in Islamic theology, there are many actions which are sinful, there are many actions which are permitted. And so we don't really say that you can't be gay and Muslim, because we don't recognize the term gay, or we don't make that discrimination between, you know, heterosexual, homosexual. This is all artificial. We're all just human. We shouldn't discriminate or judge someone or label someone, because that's when the discrimination begins.
Okay. So I'm slightly confused. Would you therefore describe Asif as sinful?
You know what? What he does in the privacy of his own home is not really my concern.
Just answer the question. I'm just saying.
No. But wait, look. I don't know what he does in the privacy of his own home. It's not my concern. It's not my business.
If you want
a judgment, you can refer it to God. I'm not God. I'm just a human being, like anybody else, a sinful human being. But that being said, yeah, Islamic theology says that there are certain actions like drinking alcohol, eating pork, and engaging in same gender intercourse or different gender intercourse outside of marriage, these are all sinful actions, right? But you can still be a Muslim and do sinful actions. It's your belief that determines whether you are Muslim or not. But I will say this, the real intolerance, I think, and this is an issue I heard earlier on, was I think it's a bit rich. Maj Nawaz, he says that you can't profile young people, just because they have hoodies or whatever. But his organization profiles Muslims who have orthodox beliefs, and he calls them extremists, and he's a government-funded stooge attacking Muslims. That's all his organization ever does.
Okay. Majid?
That was really interesting, because actually what we're talking about is something completely different. But if I can just give a couple of seconds on that, and actually got right to get back to the subject matter. Quilliam doesn't profile Muslims. That's why I've been sitting here speaking against profiling, and we're not government-funded. Now back to the subject. I think that it's about time we had an honest debate about this. We are, as Muslim communities, in the plural, in this country, simultaneously oppressed in many respects and the oppressors. And that's a dynamic that plays out in every other scenario of victimhood, whether it's we talk about domestic abuse. Somebody invariably has had abuse done to them when they were young, and they turn into an abuser, whether it's with a wife or with children. When they grow older, they become violent, and it's a cycle of violence. And I think, likewise, with Muslim communities across the world, we have faced a lot of violence. I've faced torture in prison in Egypt by the Egyptian regime. I have had police brutality in Essex, and in turn, we become brutalizers of others in some cases. And in the case of being a minority within this minority of being a Muslim, we sometimes end up discriminating against those minorities within the minority. And a case in point are gay Muslims. I mean, it's very, very dangerous. I interviewed somebody just yesterday, a film was shown on Newsnight, about an openly gay Muslim called Omar Quddus, who has to live in hiding. And he lives in hiding because he's been attacked so many times. And because people have said to him, you can be gay, but just don't describe yourself as Muslim as a result. We have to have an honest debate about this. It doesn't mean all Muslims are homophobic. I'm very impressed by what this gentleman said, that he doesn't want to discriminate. What I would say, though, is we have to be honest and say there is discrimination going on within Muslim communities. It's about time we call a spade a spade.
Okay. Gentleman there. Come back to you again.
Hi, I'm a British Muslim, London-born and bred. My family's been in London, Essex, past, say, 50 years. And the question that was raised a few weeks ago, the two topics quite controversial, but very simply, I think you can be gay and Muslim, and I'll tell you why. Firstly, I think it was wrong for the mosque to ban the discussion a few weeks ago, because we live in a democracy where we're allowed to disagree.
I should just say that the mosque obviously aren't here to defend themselves and their decisions.
And so I don't think we're allowed to censor anything, but very simply, first of all, I know Asif, he does a lot of great work for the LGBT Asian and Muslim community, and I've worked with him on that. Being a drag queen isn't the same as being gay. It might sound obvious, but it's quite important to make that distinction for people watching the programme. And secondly, being gay or lesbian isn't about anal sex or sexual mechanics, and it's important to make that distinction as well because it's about love. So for Dr. Nassim to say gays and lesbians are in the same vein as murderers and paedophiles is really wrong, because as a chairman of the Birmingham Mosque, he has a position of responsibility. And that same language, that rhetoric, is used by people around the world to justify murdering and persecuting LGBT community, and it causes lots of sadness, lots of heartache. I volunteered for IMAN, which is a UK-based LGBT Muslim organisation, going from strength to strength the past 15 years. And we've helped asylum seekers come to this country, but also people in the UK who've been ostracised and disowned by their own family. And very simply, to love someone isn't a sin. No religion really is preaching hate. It's about love. And if there's 1.5 billion Muslims and 10% is gay, that's 150 million lesbian and gay Muslims, and people need to stop hating and start loving.
Let's throw that back to Abdullah.
Well, I mean, as I said, Magic can come talking about how he loves minorities and so on, but it doesn't apply when it comes to the Muslim community. He tells the government that certain beliefs are extremist. These are mainstream Muslim beliefs.
Abdullah, let's stick to what we're talking about.
Sure. Including in this is the belief in Islamic theology that what is sinful, what is not sinful acts, and to believe in mainstream beliefs, which is, okay, so if I believe that same gender physical intercourse is sin doesn't make me extremist, right? There are Christians that believe this, there are Jews that believe this. I believe this, but you know, don't ask me to start judging people, because I'm not here to judge anyone. I'll be judged on their judgment along with everybody else, right? The issue is you should not be called extremist for just holding mainstream beliefs. And that's the problem, is that people that hold these beliefs are not harming anyone, not attacking anyone, they're just holding these beliefs, they're being treated as outcast renegades, dare I say, modern day heretics, by government funded stooges like Madge Nawaz.
Can I come in with some message from home? Hang on, let me speak up for people at home. Anonymous, again, I'm afraid. It's hard coming out in a Muslim family, as there are 101 questions and you end up living two lives. One straight life in front of the family, one gay life with your friends. But with me, I came out to my mum only. I still haven't told the rest of the family, but I don't wish to. I'm happy to say that I am happy, I am gay and I am Muslim. There's another one here, and again anonymous via email. As a Muslim lesbian, for me the issue surrounding homosexuality within my faith and community is one of anonymity, seclusion, fear of being outed and consequences. The pressure of marriage is constant and has led to depression and suicidal thoughts in the past. My siblings know, but telling my parents is another thing altogether. Now, Abdullah, I know you're saying you don't want to judge people individually, but isn't it attitudes within the community that we hear stories like this?
Well, I think you have to understand a bit more about Islamic theology. Okay, all Muslims, they're human, and we all commit sins, every single one of us. In Islamic theology, you're not allowed to express your sins. So if someone drinks alcohol, eats pork or whatever, you don't say, I've done this and whatever. You just keep it to yourself, because we're not meant to be proud of our sins. We all do sins. We all know this. But you shouldn't be, as a Muslim anyway, you shouldn't be saying, oh, I must come out to the closet. Okay. Who said you must come out of the closet
so
about every single thing
life.
You do in your private life? Just, you know, I don't tell everyone about my private life. I don't feel I have to come out the closet and tell people about my private
life.
You choose to eat pork,
or you choose to drink alcohol. You do not choose to be gay. And if you want to live your life by a book that's, you know, just ancient, it's just so beyond, the views are outdated.
You've made a confusion between two things, though.
In any religion, I actually think it's bad that we're debating whether Muslims should be gay or not. It should be, why can you not be religious and gay?
Can I briefly clarify that?
Quickly.
No, being gay, it refers to emotions and feelings, right? That's different from actions. All right, we're talking about actions. I'm not saying about feelings. In Islam, feelings are not sinful, right? Your feelings are not sinful, right? Actions determine whether you are a good person or a bad person. That is all we're saying.
Being gay is not bad. And when you're gay,
that's not what I'm saying. We don't even have that classification. We don't even label the people to discriminate them. You're the one that's discriminating them by saying you're different from other human beings. You are gay. You're heterosexual. We don't even make that discrimination. You're the one that.
Because you don't even acknowledge it. That's even worse.
No, I treat us humans. I treat us humans. We're all human beings.
All right. Yes, lady here.
Issues. He actually came out and said that the censorship that happened on BBC Free Speech 2 weeks ago was not only an attack on LGBT people, but also an attack on Muslims and the integrity of Muslims, and in propagating the idea that Muslims cannot have a debate that's free and open and tolerant. Now,
but the fact that we're debating it now?
Yeah, but 2 weeks later. You've censored it.
Well, it's not relevant now?
No, but the fact that you've censored it and you've postponed it is kind of relevant.
Postponed is not the same as censored.
Well, really it was, because it's like what the gentleman was saying about the mosque expressed concern. They didn't even ban it. They expressed concern, and the BBC decided to abide by that. And then they came out saying that the death threats. What I would like to ask Asif is, at the end of the day, you identify yourself as gay. Why do you then choose, because it is a choice, why do you then choose to be a Muslim when it says explicitly within Islam, within Judeo-Christian tradition, that is prohibited? It's a choice.
I would just like to say that sexual orientation is not a choice. It's not a choice at all.
To be Muslim.
But why?
So why would you? No, don't get involved in this. Why would you choose to be a Muslim? Why would you choose to be a Muslim if in the Quran it says that is prohibited? It's a choice at the end of the day. You can choose to be a Muslim or you can choose not to be.
It doesn't say in the Quran that it's prohibited. What is prohibited is the act.
Surat al-A'raf. I can give you the ayah that it says it in.
I am not here to talk about that one
what
act.
Would you do
what
here
I am here to talk about.
Let Asif speak, please. Let Asif speak. Let him respond to your question.
I am not here to talk about that one act. What I'm here to talk about is love. Love between two men, two women.
When will it be okay and accepted to be gay in Islam? That is not... It's a loaded question, but I'm sorry. You either be gay or you be Muslim. No one is forcing you to be a Muslim.
Yeah, lady here in the blue.
I think that is totally wrong. I mean, I was brought up in an Islamic household. I'm from an Islamic community. I'm from a very conservative Pakistani community. If my mum and dad can accept me, why can't the wider community accept me for who I am?
Just lady in the blue, and then we come to Mr.
I personally think that the question you're asking is when will the Muslim community accept you as a gay person, accept gay or homosexuality? The thing is, homosexuality is not accepted in Islam, so the Muslim community will never accept homosexuality in a whole. But you being gay, not on a judgmental level, you can be gay, but then at the same time, if you choose to follow a religion which prohibits homosexuality, then you can't turn around and ask when will they accept for you to be gay.
Can I just say then... Can I just say, what are people like me meant to do then? You know, gay teenagers, the suicide rate is going up, homophobic crime is going unreported, and it's because of attitudes like this that is causing people like me such dilemma.
I mean, I will speak out and continue to speak out, and your right to identify however you want, because what we're hearing right now is, and you guys can also think whatever you want, the danger with literalism is in insisting that there is only one interpretation and one way of doing things. Mm. If we take that literally, if we take literalism literally, then only 200 years ago, slavery was accepted and justified by religion. Let me finish. The Quran explicitly and literally... Let me finish and make this point. The Quran literally allows for slavery, as does the Bible, but we no longer practice it because our attitudes and interpretations have changed. There is no one Muslim community. There is no one way of interpreting things. If he wants to identify as being Muslim, as this gentleman here said, Abdullah, he said he's not going to tell him he's not a Muslim. And I applauded him for that. He said he's not going to discriminate against him. You just did. And so even he disagrees with
him. Yes,
you did. Everyone goes. Everyone goes.
Bring Tim in here. God does not exclude anyone. That is a crucial first point. And everyone has the right to define for themselves what their identity is. And we all have identities which quite often are contradictory. We all have to find some way of navigating that, of remaining faithful to our vision of God while also remaining faithful to who we are. But to add to that also, the rest of society, in particular state, should not try to impose its view or its morality upon Islam. This is a conversation that has to happen within Islam. There might be room for growth and change. Ultimately, you decide for yourself. But the idea of saying to someone, you're a sinner, even if you do define them as a sinner, you cannot be part of this religion. That to me is anti-God, because that's a decision that God makes. Not you. Not you.
What you said about interpretation, you're pushing the idea that there is no true interpretation of Islam. By that exact logic, you're saying that the people, the extremists, right, their interpretation of religion is also valid. There is mainstream Islam. There are things that are universally accepted within Islam. For example, the gentleman brought up the idea of drinking, of doing drugs, you know. Those things are prohibited within Islam. I can choose not to do them, or I can. But for me to go out and say, I'm a Muslim and I drink and that should be accepted, that's not religion. That's not what you're
describing.
You're conflating choice and how somebody is without choice. That first of all, he was born the way he is, and I'm sure he can speak for himself. What I would like to say to you is, many, many Muslims would consider you sinful for not covering your face and would insist that you're sinful and you can't be a Muslim for showing your face and not wearing the jilbab, the long gown. So at the end of the day, this is all interpreted. I'm talking about interpretation. Can I just finish my point?
Go ahead.
They would also say that you shouldn't be speaking in front of men, you shouldn't be on television.
There are
literalists who argue that too. We know that because they're in power.
Let's just go back to Abdullah quickly, everyone.
Osama bin Laden was asked, right, he was asked, why did you go against the Islamic prohibitions of killing women and children? And he says, the law's not set in stone.
He's a modernist. Osama bin Laden is a reinterpretationist modernist. He believes in different interpretation of Islam. You can reinterpret it. It's the same mentality that Majid Nawaz has to reinterpret scripture when it suits him. In Islam, we believe in rules. We believe in principles. Okay. You can't
he's
just change those things. You can't just change those things when it suits you.
Okay, Abdullah. Yes, you've been very patient.
I think the real question we should be asking ourselves is when will religion accept homosexuality? Because to narrow it down to Muslims is not actually doing anyone any favours.
Let's get the power bar action. Before we do, though, some comments. This is the minority view, though. You can't be gay and a Muslim. Islam forbids it. So you're not really a Muslim, you're just Asian. And Zainab says, hang on, these are the messages coming in. We need to reflect what people are saying. Being gay and Muslim isn't right and it's disrespectful. But let's have a look at the power bar. 71% of people at home watching online say, yes, it's all right to be gay and Muslim. So that is a majority view.
Gentleman up here,
It's a question of the Bible and the Quran. You know, society creates laws, and we are here to abide by the laws and the constitution of that society. If Christians have the Bible, and the Bible sets out rules that Christians should follow, you are either a Christian or you are not a Christian. No, exactly. Equally so, if there is a Quran and there are laws that are set for you to follow, you either accept or reject. On the basis of all this, people have right to their choices. So it's all about choice and the life you want to live, but you should not hold others to ransom because of the right life you want to live.
Okay. Amy.
I'm a Christian and I'm also a lesbian, and I believe that we are all made in God's image. And God has also given us the ability to judge for ourselves and to think for ourselves, and that is the crucial point here.
Yeah. Yeah, but people will also make the judgment that they want to follow a biblical or a Quran-led form of that faith. What I find odd is the idea that there is one true interpretation which can be applied across the religion or across the culture. For me, I deeply respect people who choose to live a chaste life, who are gay, and who choose to live according to those biblical precepts. But I respect also, you have to, those who choose to follow a different kind of relationship with God. And the idea that I have a right to say to them, you ain't going to get into heaven, that's not my call to make. That's God's call to make.
Okay. Lady at the back here.
I think that all religions practice love. So therefore, for you to separate them from a religion, it's not practicing love. You're not loving them for who they are. Rather than, like, looking at their acts, whatever, love them regardless. Because at the end, you're still practicing one religion.
Okay. Gentlemen at the back there.
I think the biggest problem here for Islam, I'm going to speak as an outsider, I'm a Catholic Christian who actually practices my faith. And with Islam, I think the issue is accept or tolerance. You know, I've got friends who are Muslims, and they will tell you, in fact, Islam is not even about love. It's about rules. You see, there's a big difference, and I'm not going to obviously pinpoint Muslim, but as a Christian, as a Catholic Christian, there is a universal interpretation. The church has defined that. So I think the issue is here, where he's talking about calling him a heretic, is what I'll call a Protestant heretic. I think here is because Islam, they're interpreting there's too many interpretations involved. I think the big issue is if they had define, obviously, some sort of dogma that says this is what it really means, then you won't have the issue. And obviously, you've got to accept, you've got to, in fact, you know, tolerate. You've got to tolerate. No, you've got to tolerate, in fact, that he's a
Muslim. We're not going to go away.
No, you've got to tolerate he's gay. And obviously, I tolerate you're lesbian. But you have to understand, you can't contradict the teaching of the faith. That's the big issue here.
Can I just say, for the record, that I have actually congratulated this gentleman three times for his not discrimination. I know what his problem is with me, but I actually don't have a problem with him. So just let's state that for the record.
Okay. Yes, Jasmine, the yellow T-shirt.
Is the issue here not that as soon as you start judging somebody else based on one factor of their personality and their identity, you get into a really dangerous
territory? That's a good place to end, because we have got out of time. I'm sorry. That is it. We're off air until April the 10th, which is a Thursday, 2 weeks from now. We'll be coming from Winchester, and we're going to be joined by a special audience made up of two groups of people, those educated in the comprehensive system and those educated privately. We'll be seeing what they think of the issues of the week.